Thanks, everybody, for coming here. The February 14, 2012 meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy is called to order. And let the record reflect that the time is currently 3:12 p.m. And for the record, we do have a quorum, and we have with us Representative Peterson, Representative Tuck, Representative Lynn, and myself chairing Representative Foster. Representative Pruitt and Sadler are excused from today's meeting. And also Representative Kurt Olson will be joining us soon. In the audience, I would like to recognize that we do have with us here Representative Edgman. And at this time, I'd just like to remind everybody to please turn off your cell phones. It can interfere with the sound system. So, the purpose for today's meeting is to hear House Bill 294 by Representative Edgman, and that is an act relating to the Power Cost Equalization Program. A presentation, we'll also be hearing a presentation by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and a progress report on the Chicoutimi Lake Hydropower Project. I would like to, since we have a lot on the agenda today, and I think we're 15 minutes into this today so far here, I'm thinking that maybe if we could spend about an hour and 15 on the PCE and then split the remaining time 15-20 minutes with the other two remaining presentations. So as our first order of business, we'll be hearing House Bill 294 by Representative Edgman. And Representative Edgman, if you could please come to the hot seat there, and if you've got anybody else with you. Is there a motion to adopt House Bill 294, an act relating to power cost equalization 27-LS1108/A as our working document?
Mr. Chair, I would move to adopt House Bill 294, 27-LS1108/A.
Okay, is there an objection? Hearing none, HB 294 version A is adopted as our working document. We do have two fiscal notes from the administration, and that is HB 294-DCCED. AIDEA-02-10-12 and let's see here. Is there a motion to adopt the fiscal notes?
So moved.
Thank you. And it's been moved that the committee adopt the two House Bill 294 fiscal notes. Is there any objection? Hearing none, fiscal notes are adopted. And Representative Edgman,
would you
please like to tell us about HB 94 and please proceed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bryce Edgman. I represent House District 37, which is in Southwest Alaska. The bill before you, House Bill 294, really in its application is pretty simple. What it proposes to do is to take the Power Cost Equalization Program and return it back to its pre-1999 form when the program offered subsidies to essentially all of the users in rural communities, with exception of federal facilities. So House Bill 294 would take the Power Cost Equalization Program, which today provides for a subsidy to consumers up to the level of about 500 kilowatt hours per monthly usage, and is largely limited to residential users in eligible communities into rural Alaska, but to take that program and to expand it so that that monthly cap of 500 kilowatt hours is expanded to 700 kilowatt hours, as well as incorporating more of the non-residential users into the program, again back the way it was in 1999. Now really, Mr. Chairman and committee members, this discussion is focused on the power cost equalization because that's the bill in front of us. But I'm also hopeful along the way that we have the opportunity to discuss really what is the more immediate issue, and that's the extremely high cost of energy out in rural communities that rely exclusively on the diesel as their fuel for doing any type of activity out in the rural areas. Came up with the idea for this bill after attending the Rural Energy Conference this past September down here in January, and having had the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to serve in your chair a couple years ago on this committee, travel the state, and really get to know the energy issues in some depth. I did some thinking about what it was that we could do to, number one, to spur discussion on taking action towards providing relief for energy-strapped rural Alaskans, but also to, look to the one vehicle that I thought was already in place and that upon expansion could provide that relief to rural Alaskan consumers. Now, I'm not going to be Pollyannish about this bill. It's obviously going to have its supporters. It's going to have its detractors. I think you're going to hear the fiscal impact. You're going to hear about the strengths of the power cost equalization program, perhaps some of the weaknesses, some of the incentives it provides, as well as some of the disincentives. I'm fully aware of that. But I'd like to have that discussion through this bill, if possible, and would like to make one more comment, Mr. Chairman, along the lines that we in the legislature, we've done a lot for energy in the past 5 or 6 years. Energy oil prices have been pretty low from the early 80s to essentially 2002, 2003. But the last several years here in the legislature, we've put a lot of money towards weatherization, home energy rebate programs. The low-income heating assistance program has been beefed up. We've beefed up community and revenue sharing programs, as well as put $400 million more into the PC endowment. But I'll bet you if you went into any rural community, and particularly after this cold snap that we've had out there, and asked them what was the end effect on their utility bills or their fuel bills, they would probably tell you not a whole lot, if any at all. So I'm going to keep my comments brief because I know we're strapped for time here, but I wanted to close by saying that this bill, I hope, receives a vigorous discussion, and we're going to have a number of the power utility folks behind me who are going to testify, as well as Alaska Energy Authority, and that that we as well have the opportunity to focus on the rising cost of energy in rural Alaska and what it is we in the legislature can and cannot do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Okay, what I'd like to do is we will hold the bill over so that we can continue the discussion and we can make sure that we're being as inclusive as possible and making sure that people can give their input. And so we'll start with committee questions, and then after that we'll go to the utilities and AEA, and then the folks in the audience who'd like to testify, and then the off-net. So with that, committee questions, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's a pleasure to see you back in this committee room again, Representative Edgman, the good old stomping grounds from the good old days. I was just going to ask you if you think with raising the number from 500 to 700 kilowatt hours, is that going to include most, say, like rural grocery stores and communities? Would they be getting qualified for PCE, to which might in turn lower the cost of food that they're selling in the communities?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, it would, but 700 kilowatt hours for a larger, let's say, AC retail store in Bethel or Dillingham or Barrow isn't really going to go that far, but for the smaller villages with the smaller mom-and-pop store, it would definitely provide make a dent in their monthly electricity bill. And really what we're looking at with this bill is not only to provide relief to a lot of consumers out there paying high energy prices, but also a way to affect or to bring down the overall cost structure in rural Alaska by attempting to make a dent in the energy costs out there.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Maybe if we could, would it be your preference to go to AEA first or the utilities?
Probably AEA, but we do have the utility folks in the room here. They're in town, and it'd be really nice to get them to testify here in person if possible, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Is AEA, is there a representative from AEA here? Sarah Fisher Goad, if you wouldn't mind coming forward and maybe giving your name for the record as well as starting with your testimony. I would like to point out, for the record, we have been joined by Representative Kurt Olson. So, Sarah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Fisher Goad, the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. And I do know that you are pressed for time. And so I think for me, what I'd like to do is just quickly run through the fiscal impact of the legislation so you can take the public testimony from the utilities that are here, if that's the pleasure of the committee. With respect to the fiscal note, I'll start with the AEA fiscal note. The estimated impact in increased cost of the program is approximately $33.1 million. On page 2 of the fiscal note, we break this out to explain in three sections and what those costs, how that is broken out. The $15.1 million increase is the 40% increase from the current customers being able to have a reimbursement of up to 700 kilowatt hours per month from the 500 kilowatt hours. Now, I should point out that we assumed in order to estimate this that folks would take advantage of that and use the full 700 kilowatt hours. It has been our experience that rural folks in this program don't always take advantage of the 500 kilowatt hours that are available to them right now on a monthly basis. And of course, some of that is a seasonal impact too. But for simplicity on the fiscal impact, we did assume 12 months, 700 kilowatt hours for those residential customers. The annual cost to include commercial and public school customers is approximately $17.9 million. What we did with this is we went back to the 99 statistics and used those statistics for the commercial customers that we knew of at that time, and then we also estimated 2 public school buildings per community. Now, of course, that's not, we just had to average that with the 184 communities that we have. There are some communities that are a bit larger that we assume that 2 would average out. We just did not have the time to do that on a community by community basis to check for the school amount. And then we also have an increased cost of one utility clerk or PCE clerk to help with the what we think will be increased cost to manage the program. And part of that is to be able to verify eligibility and provide that technical support to the utilities that may need that since the program would be expanded. So that's the breakdown of the program. And then just to add some clarity to this with the funding split on the program, on page 3 you'll actually see that we've done an estimate of the out-year estimates and how that would be broken down with the PC Endowment Fund and the $400 million that will be incorporated into the program funding mix as we go on in future years. The PC Endowment is used on a 3-year monthly average market value, so we can use 7% of that 3-year monthly average market value for the program. The $400 million was appropriated in June of last year, and for our FY13 calculation, that's not part of the PCE calculation. But you can see in the out years how we've assumed that would come into the program in future years. The other fiscal note is the fiscal note that reflects the position in the ADA component. If you'll recall, AEA statutorily does not have positions. ADA has the positions that carry out the AEA programs. So that fiscal note is an interagency receipt fiscal note. So the cost of the program are reflected in the AEA fiscal note. The position is reflected in the ADA fiscal note.
Okay. Are there any questions of the committee? Hearing none, we will thank you, Ms. Fisher Goad. We'll move to the utilities here, and in the room we have a few of them here. Mira Kohler with AVIC, if you wouldn't mind coming forward and stating your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Mira Kohler, and I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Village Electric Co-op. We are a nonprofit, member-owned utility that serves 54 villages, having recently acquired EQWOC last year, which was kind of a nice move. I want to start out by telling you that last year, I just got the numbers for our population for last year, and for the first year in our history since 1968, we are actually showing a decline in the population that we're serving. And it's a fairly significant decline. It's about almost 500 individuals out of our 22,000 that we previously had, and that's even after the addition of ECWOC, which added 117 residents to our communities. So to me, what that's reflecting, and we've talked about this over the last few years since 2008, when the first shoe hit the floor, is when is the next shoe going to drop? Well, it's dropping. And we're seeing now an actual measurable exodus from the villages. And I hope it doesn't continue, but it is what it is. I have some prepared comments that I would like to read to you. And it goes as follows. Alaska Village Electric Co-op would like to express our support for HB 294, which seeks to restore power cost equalization benefits to levels that existed before 1999. PCE was established in 1984 in an effort to bring the cost of electricity to rural Alaskans, households, and businesses to a level more or less equal to that enjoyed by urban Alaskans. This benefit was extended for the first 700 kilowatt hours for all non-government consumers. In an effort to reduce the cost of the program, it has been trimmed back several times by the legislature. First, to reduce the number of beneficiaries by eliminating all but the first meter owned by a consumer. Later, to reduce the number of eligible kilowatt hours, and then to eliminate commercial customers, and finally to increase the floor from the original 8 cents a kilowatt hour. That floor is now around 14 cents. The cumulative impact of these changes over the years has resulted in the number of eligible kilowatt hours and their associated cost being reduced by about half. HB 294 seeks to restore the eligible kilowatt hours from the current 500 back to the original 700 kilowatt hours and to restore eligibility to commercial customers. Although it may not appear that a 700 kilowatt hour benefit is of meaningful impact to commercial customers, this is not the case. It would be an extremely meaningful benefit for thousands of Alaskans who are operating very modest businesses in their communities. They are creating jobs, and they're multiplying the spending power of local dollars. AVEC communities account for about one-third of the state PCE benefits, $11.3 million last year in calendar year 2011. Analyzing our billing records for the last year, I calculate that increasing the eligible kilowatt hours to 700 and adding back commercial customers will result in an additional $4.28 million in PCE to our 54 communities. If the approximately 100 school facilities in our villages are also included, that would add another $227,000 for a total increase of 40% to the program as it currently stands. This is different from the numbers that were just read to you by the Energy Authority, but Sarah explained that that was based upon assuming that customers currently use the full 500 and would use the full 700 in the future. They did not break out the residential customers from the community facility customers, which are not going to change at all because their ceiling remains the same at 70 kilowatt hours per resident. That combined with the fact that the actual average consumption of PCE-eligible electricity by residential consumers is currently 284, not 500. So we estimate, based on our actual billing, that our average consumption, which is now about 380, would go up to about 600 at the very most, likely less than that. In FY10, the total cost of generating electricity in the PCE communities amounted to $157.6 million. That's from the AEA's PCE report. PCE provided $30.6 million of that, less than 20%. Restoring part of the benefit that has been eliminated over the last two decades will result in the program cost increasing to about $43 million, still only 27% of the cost of delivering electricity in rural Alaska. Your support is strongly encouraged. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Are there any questions for the committee? And if we could get a copy of your testimony in writing, I think that would be certainly appreciated. Thank you.
I have embellished it a little bit with additional information, but I'll try and give some notes relating to that. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay, next up amongst the utilities, we have Brad Reeves with Kotzebue Electric. Thank you, Brad. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for having us here today. We're also in favor of re-examining the program to see if there's benefits that could be given to rural Alaska residents. We're all aware of just how high the costs are out there. Our average usage is about 560 kilowatt hours per month in Kotzebue, but what hits people the hardest is the seasonal cost when you get into the winter seasons or whatever. And it's especially hard for people with bigger families, younger people that are trying to, their kids are in the refrigerator more, whatever it is, at the computer more, trying to do schoolwork. Is that that's where a bit of an increase would be very beneficial to families, to folks, especially in the winter season when they're coming in on Christmas, and costs are much higher for fuel at the same time. So it's kind of a double hit. So some relief in that regard could be beneficial to members of our utility. I know a lot of the arguments in the past were ones that they didn't want to see government paying government for relief on things, and I think that that's stated in the bill. I think that the whole argument of schools getting money, I think in a larger school district like ours, have very little impact, but to the smaller villages, that it could be very beneficial. There was some reference from Representative Edgman about mom-and-pop operations, especially in small villages. It could be a make-or-break type situation when you have a very small commercial operation, and some relief there on the electric side of things would be very, very beneficial for them. So I'm going to just keep my comments very brief. I know conservation is helping in some regards. I think we need to continue that. I think we need to find ways to deal with it. And maybe there's a way in this discussion that we could look at how the program is done in the floor and some things, too, that could be very beneficial, so there'd be a little more benefit going to areas of extremely high cost. I wish there was a similar program for heating fuel. That's one of the largest complaints a lot of our customers have, is that this certainly helps in that regard, but filling up the tank with diesel in the middle of winter in Kotzebue, you buy 500 gallons, it's $3,000. So any benefit on the other side of the equation. So when you look at the entire energy picture, you've got that increased cost coming on the heating side. If there's some help on the electric side, it helps balance things. It won't make a perfect world, but it'll certainly, any assistance would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you. And if you've also got testimony, if you could submit that in writing. Next up here, we have Jody Mitchell with the Inside Passage Electric Co-op. Are you here, Jody? Thank you. And if you could state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Jody Mitchell, and I'm the CEO of Inside Passage Electric Cooperative. We are a regulated, member-owned, nonprofit electric cooperative, and we serve five rural service areas here in Southeast Alaska. We are primarily diesel generation, although we are working on solutions, renewable energy solutions for each of our communities. I think, you know, the legislation that we're talking about here is good, and I'm speaking in favor of it. I really believe when you're talking about energy use, it's a quality of life issue. Many of my members, you know, are limited to one light in the wintertime because they cannot afford to turn on two. I mean, if you look in this room here, how many lights are on, that's what we're dealing with. I think also, I can't prove it, but I think an unintended consequence of limiting it to 500 kilowatt hours actually encourages people to conserve it, because believe me, they know where that 500 limit is and what it takes to stay under that. And if they were able to relax a little bit, especially in the wintertime when we have a long period of darkness, I believe that the utility itself would realize greater economies of scale, and therefore would be able to have a lower rate per kilowatt hour through higher sales, spreading our fixed costs over a greater number of sales. Right now, the eligible amount of kilowatt hours sales that we have is really only about 30% of our kilowatt hour sales in a year. That really exposes the business community, and they are hurting. I mean, they are letting me know on a very regular basis that they cannot afford to stay in business, and we've seen failures, which have been really difficult for us to watch. But if you think about it, in the face of rising costs for not just electricity, but for heating and every other thing, how can you do any business planning? You know, when you really don't have any idea what you're going to be paying for electricity or for heating in the next few months, how can you price your products and services and make sure that you're still going to make money? And people, if people in your community are spending all of their income on heating and electricity, they have very little left over for anything else. We have stories of people who, and they really do have to juggle whether they are able to buy food or pay their bills. So it's really a quality of life issue that, I could go on and on about, but I'll try to be brief here. Another thing, Mira brought up the fact that they are starting to see out-migration. Well, we've had a lot of out-migration, especially the community of Cake. They have lost a lot of population. They're not the only ones in our service area. But, as an Alaska Native person, to me that is very disturbing because of the fact that, our culture is at stake. And I think that people need to be able to live in the place that they love. And if they can't afford to live there, I just think it's a really sad state for this beautiful state with all the beautiful cultures that we have, that I think that this might help. And I appreciate your time and the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Let's see here, and I know we've got a utility on the line here. Before we go to the off-nets here, are there any other utilities here that would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, I know online here we have John Hanlon with the Nome Joint Utility System. John, are you there?
I am, Chairman Foster. Thank you very much for the opportunity to join you today, and to other members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity. I want to thank Representative Edgman and co-sponsors for introducing this legislation. It's issue that the City of Nome has had in our legislative packet for a number of years, and just with the record-breaking cold temperatures that we've experienced throughout Alaska here this year, as well as the increased costs of fuel, it's something, energy issues is something that the City Council and Utility Board have been raising even higher up the priority list. My comments, are a couple. I believe that the 700 kW change is good to put it back to where the program was at its inception. The addition of the other businesses and commercial customers, I think, will provide some assistance. As mentioned, to the big ACs and the likes, they won't notice it necessarily, but certainly small businesses are impacted. Another that I believe merits looking at is the 70 kW a month for each residential community that is eligible for local community facilities. Over the course of, as far as I know, this is the limit that has been in the program, at least since I was with the utility, since 1999, and probably was established when the program was first incepted. But there have been changes with electronics, computers.
This meeting is now over. Thank you for calling.
So there.
At ease.
Oh,
We're back in order here. John Hendlin, are you online still?
We are. Thank you. I apologize for whatever happened. Wasn't the electricity that went out. I know that much.
Call it a solar flare, or maybe there's a loss of power there.
Yeah, really.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Did you want me to continue now, or I can stand by?
Absolutely. And just for the record, I'll just repeat your name here. John Hanlon with Nome Joint Utility System. And please proceed with your testimony. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Representative Foster. I was just commenting on the number of kilowatts that are available for local community facilities. That's set at 70. And with all the changes in technology, computers, electronics, air handling systems, and the likes, that probably impacts some communities greater than it does Nome, but that might be an area for consideration by the committee as they continue to work on this bill. I did want to also suggest that as has been mentioned here, this has been an extremely hard winter. Folks have had to make some difficult choices. Record baking cold. We've seen folks that have actually had to supplement their heating with electricity, and have been using, in some cases, several thousand kilowatts of electricity during the month simply to stay warm. I don't think that the change in the PCA eligibility rate really does anything to impact folks as far as conservation. As another party testified, people are fully cognizant of the level at which the PCE is available, and they use the electricity out of necessity, not out of a luxury. One item that comes to mind when the discussion by Ms. Fisher Goad stated that the cost of this program had been computed on the seasonality of folks' use, and that people wouldn't always use up to the limit. We do see that here, and when people really need this assistance is during the winter, when they need to use more electricity. And it strikes me that a way to address that was to basically do like some of these phone companies do, where you have rollover minutes. Basically, if it's 500 kilowatts, you get 6,000 in a year, or you get 8,400 if under this new program. Setting a limit, but also having the opportunity for people to bank those minutes against the time when on a seasonal basis they need to use more would be something else that we would advocate. Now, I know there will be folks that say that is simply a nightmare to keep control of, to monitor. Modern day accounting systems can do anything you tell them to. And I don't see that there are any issues associated with setting parameters within a system where, if somebody only used 200 kilowatts during a summer month or 300, that then they might be able to use 1,000 during the winter at times when they're actually using it for supplemental heat. My final comment and a recommendation that the City of Nome did include in their packet this year was based on the extremely record-breaking cold that we've had and record length of this stuff. We are seeing a substantial increase in our accounts receivable. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I'm not going to come out and cut somebody out off when it's 30 below. It's not in my heart to do so. And, we'll have to deal with the aftermath of that come summer when we can actually shut somebody off. But, that is going to cause some extreme hardships to folks moving forward. And another suggestion that the City of Nome advocates is that for this current bill that is being proposed, that it be retroactive to the start of the current state fiscal year, so that people could go back and capture some additional PCE credit going back to July 1 of 2011. And again, there will be folks that say, it's just impossible to deal with that. It's an accounting nightmare. For the benefit of our consumers, at least within our own utility, that really need this help, we will figure out how to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I wish you well, and thank you for the hard work that you do on behalf of the residents of the state of Alaska.
Well, and speaking of thank yous, John, there, I just wanted to mention a week before session started there, John had called me to say that there was water coming out of the from the floor of my house, and my pipes had burst. But luckily, he called me early enough to before too much damage had occurred. So I just wanted to say thank you and keep up the good work that you guys are doing out there. So thank you, John. Okay, next here we have Gene Strong from IFEC. Gene, if you could come up. And please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Gene Strong from Klukwan, Alaska, and I'm an IPEC board member. And I'm very encouraged to your committee, Senator, that you're considering this new move here. It's not a new concept, but I really appreciate that your desire is to raise this the kilowatt hours up to the 700. Seems like it was 750 one time, but regardless, it's a very good thing that you're considering to do, and it shows that your heart is in the right, your hearts are in the right place. You want to help out the communities, especially the rural communities out there, because it does outsource a lot of people, and also what that happens, it impacts the urban areas, and so there's a kind of a two-edged sword. And like that gentleman was saying, I think it would be a good idea. Don't think it would be too much of an impact on the bookkeeping, because you already have records of the past 15 years or how long this program's been for each community or each utility on the people that's using the PCE now. And I don't think it would be that much of a problem for doing a seasonally billing thing. And I'd like to encourage this, if we could do this on the billing thing, make it a seasonal billing instead of a monthly thing, because it's a nightmare on the paperwork. By the time you get your PCE papers in, well, you got your oil bill that's already past due, and if you can work something with that, you know, on your billing cycles, do an annual thing, or that would be very encouraging to a lot of the community, especially the smaller utilities like we have. It's almost have a hard time saying, well, we got to pay our oil bill to, you know, keep the oil generators going, but then we got to wait for the PCE, because the economy in each community is pretty tight. And actually, in wintertime, there's no economy. So I'm very encouraged that you're considering and raising this to the 700 level, and if we couldn't be more, because we have in the future, we have some other programs that's going to help alleviate that in our area. We cover quite a bit of big area. It's five communities, so we're not tied together, so that kind of makes it a lot of a nightmare and paperwork. So, but we do have some projects coming up, hydroelectric, that'll help curtail some of those hardships. We just need to keep an open mind and hope you all would help us out on this, our projects that's coming up in the near future. And thank you for hearing me.
Thank you, Gene. Appreciate your testifying. And the final utility, I believe, is Nushagak Cooperative with Pete Andrew. Are you here? And if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peter Andrew. I'm the president of Nushagak Cooperatives. I come to you and to testify on support of 294. Nushagak is in the Bristol Bay region. We provide electricity, telephone, internet, cable TV, and Dillingham is also, like Nome, Kotzebue, and other rural communities, that is a hub. And being a hub, we service many smaller communities. I feel that restoring the 700 from the 500 is going to help enhance a little bit of economic growth. It's going to help our fellow Alaskans, and I think it's the right thing to do. And as you know, as John said from Nome, we also had some record coal. And I urge this body and to support this bill. And I thank you very much. I wish all of you good luck.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you for indulging me as a non-member of this committee. But I wanted to ask Mr. Andrew, given that he's my hometown utility, if he might piggyback on Mr. Hanlon's previous comment about the bills coming due and accounts receivable stacking up. And Pete, if you might talk about what you think the aftermath in the Bristol Bay area might be, part of the state that's obviously very southern to the colder Bering Straits region and up in the Arctic Circle, but still very cold and extremely cold this past 6 or 7 weeks. But maybe you might just elaborate a little bit on what you think the overall impact is going to be on some of your utility customers.
If this were to be reinstated to a 700 cap per state, I feel and I know I've seen many occasions where some of my fellow Alaskans in these communities buying heating oil at 5 gallons a time just so that they could make a couple of days. And if you could think about that in a dollar for dollar per se, it frees them up a little bit more to buy a little more fuel. Also, we're fortunate enough in Dillingham to have wood heat. There's been a tremendous amount of use on wood heat. And you know, thanks to the legislature regarding weatherization, I think that program has done very well for rural Alaska. I know that it helps stretch some dollars. Does that answer any of your concerns, Bryce? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Okay. Seeing none, let's see here. As far as folks in the audience here, was there anybody else who wished to testify on HB 294 before I go onto the phone here? And we have Andrew Guy from Bethel, if you could please state your name and affiliation just for the record. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andrew Guy, President and CEO of Telstra Corporation. Mr. Chairman, I had not intended to testify on this bill, so I might be rambling a bit as I go along. But I'd like to testify in favor of this bill, and specifically the provision for including commercial businesses in this. Exit corporations were formed back in 40 years ago, primarily to benefit the shareholders and descendants, basically to improve the socioeconomic living standards of the people that we serve. And one of the best ways that we can do that is starting businesses and providing jobs that those businesses would need in order to operate. Speaking from management's perspective on this one in starting projects or businesses. It's very hard to start and operate a sustainable business out in rural Alaska, primarily because of the costs associated with doing business out there. And one of the biggest costs there is the cost of electricity. I've traveled out to my region just about every month, and usually at the airports in like in Bethel or one of the villages, I see people who are traveling to Bethel and to Anchorage. And usually they come in for, you know, other purposes like going to the hospital or going to meetings. But a surprising number of them are going into town just to go shopping. They find it it's a lot cheaper to buy a plane ticket from their village to Bethel than to Anchorage, rent a car, stay in a hotel, and do their shopping, than to shop locally. You know, something is wrong, very wrong with that picture. We cannot develop sustainable businesses or develop or grow our economy when we continue to do that. So I would urge you to consider this, because it will help our village corporations grow. If they can lower the cost of doing business that they have, they'll have more of their funds coming into the stores and the other businesses that they begin, you know, circulate that money out there in rural Alaska, grow the economy, get the jobs out there. You know, it'll feed on itself. But we do need to get a control on the cost of operating, which electricity is one of a big factor. You know, I do not know for certain, but I do believe that urban businesses have benefited from energy programs that have been brought into the rail belt. And our businesses out in rural Alaska deserve the same parity. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity.
Thank you, Andrew. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none. Let's see here. I think we've got Henrika from Cake. Were you wanting to testify on HB 294 or?
Henrich.
Okay, please. If you could please state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your
Henrich Cake, Sr., Mayor of Cake. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm speaking in behalf of this bill. I support it wholeheartedly because in my village, I've been mayor for 9 years, the population has decreased almost 45%. We went from 900 and some people living in our community to 510 in the last census. And it's due because we cannot operate, you know, a small business in our community because we do not have the energy. We can't afford it. We can't even afford to keep our houses warm and stuff. And 90% of us in our community are on fixed income, are either retired or teachers or whatever it is, that only what few jobs we have in Cake. And we're looking to try to get our businesses going in Cake Tribal Corporation, and we just cannot afford the energy in our community. And other than that, I just would like to urge you to support this bill, and we really feel it's a good thing for the people in the rural communities in Southeast too. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the off nets here. And Andy Varner with the Southwest Municipal Conference, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
If you could just state your name.
I'm sorry, wait for a second. You got a lot of testimony, so I had to get back into up to speed here. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Andy Varner. I'm the Executive Director of the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference, or also known as SWMC. We're the ARTER that represents Bristol Bay, Lake of Peninsula Borough, Kodiak Island Borough, and the Aleutian and the Pribilofs. And Representative Edgman is represents a good portion of our district in Southwest Alaska. So I think a lot of folks in our region are appreciative of him introducing this legislation. Swansea, as an ARTER, one of the major objective is to increase economic and business development in our region. And as you know, operating a business is a challenging environment in rural Alaska. For businesses to thrive, they need to keep costs low. And energy, along with infrastructure and long distances and markets, that's one of those things that can really stifle economic development and drive costs up. Particularly for small businesses out in rural Alaska, when the full costs of energy are being paid, these get passed on to consumers, as a lot of folks have already referenced here. And when that happens, prices go up, less businesses is created, and it's sort of a vicious cycle. So anything we can do to keep components of business operations down, I think, is great for the business environment in rural Alaska. Representative Edgman earlier stated that he noticed sort of a theme at the Rural Energy Conference last fall in Juneau, and that was something I picked up too. Many small businesses, and I think one or two of you maybe testified today down in Southeast, they said that pretty soon they may be forced to close up shop because of fuel costs. They've been able to float on reserves for a couple years, but and this is before even a hard winter occurred, and it just sort of catches up to these folks and their bottom lines. And that goes without even mentioning schools. We haven't really talked a lot about schools today, but anytime you can put more money into curriculum and teaching, I think that's always a good thing, and that's another component of HB 294 that's in there. When oil prices are high, sometimes the state does well and it kind of rides on the back of the residents and businesses. And it's a good thing anytime we can help out people that are trying to make an income, make a living, trying to be entrepreneurial in rural Alaska. So I think HB 294 may not, while not perfect, it's a great start to the conversation. I think, again, Representative Edgman, who introduced this, mentioned that in his early remarks. That's one of the goals, is to start a conversation on what we can do to keep folks in business in rural Alaska. PCE is still critical to rural Alaskans. A lot of great programs through energy efficiency and renewable energy fund and weatherization. A lot of great programs have come out of the legislature regarding helping rural Alaskans cope with energy costs the last few years, but this is one that could really directly impact businesses and therefore impact the pockets of a lot of folks that shop at those businesses in rural Alaska. So that's all I had to say. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, Jim.
Okay, thank you, Andy. And Amy Adler with the AEA, were you just online to answer questions?
Yes, just to answer questions if needed.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Okay, next up we have Angela Morgan from ENIAC. Angela, are you there? Okay, it's Angie or Carl Morgan. Okay, how about, let's see here, and Robert Venables, I don't think, is online either.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Venables. I'm the Energy Coordinator for Southeast Conference, the Regional Development Organization for Southeast Alaska.
And the federally- we are not available now. Please leave your name and phone number after the beep. We will return your call.
Are you still on there, Robert?
I am still on here. I just got a recording that said that we were crashing again. So can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and go ahead and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Venables. I'm the Energy Coordinator for Southeast Conference, the state's regional development organization for Southeast Alaska, and the federally recognized economic development district. You've had plenty of testimony today, so I'll be very brief. Mostly to thank the state legislature for the efforts to date to bring about the long-term improvements that are needed to develop those regional and renewable energy resources that will diminish and hopefully someday displace the diesel dependency, but also the need for the PCE program as well. But that day is not yet here. There are still communities with just devastated economies that need help right now. Businesses are hurting in rural communities like Huna, and they're disappearing completely in communities like Angoon and Cake. The cost of operating our schools here in Southeast continue to increase in an era of diminished federal support. This legislation would be a lifesaver to school districts and businesses in our most needy communities. Perhaps HB 294 should be called Back to the Future Bill. It does not seek to establish a new program, but really it's restoring back what was the original intent of the PCE program, and it gives rural businesses a future to possibly survive. The program was understandably cut back in the days of $9 a barrel oil, but that's not the case today, with oil prices well above historic averages. HB 294 can make a difference and help right now as we all work toward better long-term solutions. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the many efforts you all are making on our region and state's behalf and for this opportunity to provide comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, we've got Tara Rudikowski, are you on the line?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you very good. And if you could proceed with your name and affiliation for the record, proceed with your testimony.
Yes. Tara Bordakovsky, Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, Human Services Director. Again, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing, and thank you, Representative Richmond, for the bill. And I just wanted to kind of just give a quick overview of the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. We represent 13 of the federally recognized tribes in our region. under my supervision, I have a Head Start program in the communities of Sandpoint, St. Paul, Unalaska, and King Cove. And here with me today to testify specifically to this bill and regarding our Head Start programs, I have our Head Start coordinator, Mark Wazerski. And he's been involved for many years with the Head Start program and has actually had a lot of opportunity to speak with Representative Edgman on an annual basis. And so we're very, very encouraged by this bill and urge that it be moved forward. And so at this time, I'd like to just turn it over to Mark to speak a little more directly with regard to the impact of this bill on our Head Start program.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Representative Edgman and the co-sponsors of HB 294. It's important that Head Start programs be included as part of the school system in Alaska and the power cost equalization be made available to rural Head Start programs, be they standalone, housed in a school district, or housed in another other facilities such as a tribal community building. The rapidly increased power costs have drastically impacted our abilities to provide for basic program needs. Health needs, safety oversight, nutritional services are being impacted because funds are needed to be diverted to cover the power costs, which in some cases can run up to $2,000 a month per site in some of our more rural and remote communities. Inclusion of Head Start programs in the Power Cost Equalization Program will free these monies to more adequately provide for the basic required services that Head Start provides to Alaska's most needy children. And again, I thank you for putting forth this bill, and we fully support that it be returned to the 1998 levels. And thank you again.
Okay, and thank you. And I believe we have Angela Morgan online. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Angela Morgan. I'm the new executive director for the
Middle RCND Council. We represent 11 villages on the Middle Kuskokwim and four villages out on the Yukon. And I'm also speaking on behalf of the Aniak Traditional Council. And one of our main goals as RCND Council is to help find economic developments for the villages. And I know it's really hard. But I was calling on behalf of them to support House Bill 294 so that they can raise the kilowatt hours from 500 to 700 per month. And like everybody's been stating, we've had really extremely cold weather, especially in the middle Yukon, middle Kuskokwim area. We've had ranging from minus 30 to minus 50 below for almost 2 months, and it's been extremely hard on our people. People have been having their heat tapes on 24 hours a day. People have been having busted pipes. People that have their families, their own families, and their grandparents, they're having hard time. They were having really hard time trying to go get wood to help their family and the elders. They just really having a hard time. And then the other thing too is our electricity. There's been many times that we had power outage. And people had to use their wood stove to keep warm until the power come on. The other thing too that I wanted to testify is we've been even though with our current PCE, people here in the Middle Kuskokwim and the Middle Yukon, their expenses just on their fuel and electricity alone has been over $1,000 a month. And like the lady that testified earlier on how they're living paycheck to paycheck, a lot of them are living, they have to go on credit because if they don't pay their electricity or whatever, they probably might get cut off. And so they're always worried about that. So I was just calling to let you know that I really feel for these people. Not only that, but also would like to ask the legislator. There's a lot of small businesses here in Aniak and in the other villages that are trying to survive. And if you help them to have other customers that are state or federal. Not only state and federal offices, but other practices to help to help them be eligible for that PEC pool system. I know a lot of these things are kind of almost like repeat, but people really need this. Really need this House bill to be passed. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of our villages here and also for Aniak. And I would also like to thank you guys for the good job that you did in creating and supporting energy programs. That makes a big difference in this, in this region. And thank you for your continued help, and please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela, for your testimony, and please pass our regards on to Representative Carl Morgan there. Thank you so much.
Yes, I will.
Okay. I believe that's the testimony that we have both in the audience and on the phone, am I correct, for HB 294. I want to thank everybody for your testimony. It's definitely an important issue. And we are doing good on time here. What we'd like to do right now is go ahead and set aside HB 294 for further consideration at a later date. And I'd like to call up our next presentation, which is the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. And we'd like to, we've got 40 minutes left in our day here, so maybe if we could split that 20 minutes for each there. And so if you could please come forward. And from the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, we do have Jack Hebert, the president and CEO. We have Alan Wilson, the board chair. Catherine Dodge, the director of policy research program, will be online to listen and answer any questions relating to policy research. And with that, please state your name and your affiliation for the record, and proceed with your testimony, and then we'll open that up to committee questions after you're done. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having us. Alan Wilson, board chairman, obviously Cold Climate Housing Research Center, and I am based out of Juneau.
And Jack Hebert, I'm president and CEO of the Cold Climate Housing Research Center, and I'm based out of Interior, Alaska. And I believe, and thank you for having us. Very, very much appreciate being invited to come down and warm up a little bit, though it's warm at home too right now. We did have a presentation that was going to kind of lead this discussion. Did you receive that?
Does everybody have a copy of the presentation?
Can that go on this machine here? Or?
It's not necessarily the guy for it.
Oh.
I could get the help
desk. Is this connected?
I don't believe so.
Oh.
Well, there are handouts, I believe, in the hallway, too.
That would be great. If I had a copy of the presentation, I'd sure be happy to work through it, but we also don't need to use it necessarily or follow it too closely, but it might help as a guideline. Are there copies of it here?
Mr. Chairman, I've got a copy here.
Yes.
Did you need a copy of that?
I would, okay. Because I thought that it was going to be up on a screen, and I could talk through it a little bit. What's that? Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. Looks like it pretty much. You're all familiar with our organization. We're 501c3, founded by the Alaska State Home Building Industry. Both of us have been builders in Alaska for many decades. Idea was that we would find practical solutions to these huge problems that we're dealing with, and that we've been hearing all afternoon here related to the cost of power and the cost of energy. And that challenge is not getting any easier. The urgency of the work that we accomplish is probably more important and more timely now than ever. And again, I appreciate being able to share a little bit of our progress with you. And many of the programs that you have supported in weatherization and in energy efficiency rebate program, and also the research that we do. As you know, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has been a big supporter of ours. In addition to that, we scramble for funding. We are not here to ask for that today. We're just here to share with you a little bit of what we're doing. How many of you have had an opportunity to come to our facility in Fairbanks? Great, thank you. It is a LEED Platinum building. It is considered to be the most energy efficient building at that latitude in the world. It was built for less than the cost of a standard commercial building for its time and uses approximately 50% less energy. So it is possible to do some amazing things in Alaska, and I think we, meaning all of you and the people of Alaska, are really the folks that can handle that. And literally, it's a matter of life or death in Alaska. It's a matter of physical life or death, and it's also a matter of economic life or death. It really comes down to this issue of sustainability, and we have got to address it aggressively. To that effect, we not only work on the housing envelope, but we work on indoor air quality. We work on affordability. We also work on setting up programs where people can take control of their future, build their homes, design their homes, and that kind of thing. We've grown very, very quickly. I'm not sure which page this is, but it shows our founding in 1999. We're business people. We've grown carefully. We have not grown for the sake of growing. We've grown as our mission and the importance of us has expanded. Right now, we have over 30 incredibly bright Alaskans working at the Housing Research Center on programs from Barrow to Heidelberg. So we are definitely a statewide organization with our home in Fairbanks. Over 50 active projects right now. I would love to show you some of those projects. I can just show you a couple in this brief presentation. Talked about our research and testing facility. That's sort of the next page on this very well-prepared presentation that I was going to show you that we don't have. But again, a statewide organization. We are doing a lot of work in rural Alaska, but that is not to say that our attention and concern for urban Alaska and our population centers is not also very much in our minds. But when you have neighbors and friends who are literally in a crisis mode, you have a tendency to put your attention there. And that's where our Sustainable Northern Communities Program, Sustainable Northern Shelter and Communities Program originates. And we're sort of on this, if you folks are able to follow along. That is a process. Our roots in designing and building homes for people, our first thing we do is ask in our businesses. And with the Housing Research Center, this process, the Sustainable Northern Communities process, is all about working with the local community, looking at the resources they have, both physical resources, the environmental resources, and their economic resources. What is possible in that place? The people that live there, and again, on this next sheet, learning from the past. We call it indigenous wisdom with 21st century technologies. We need to understand that the people that have done well in this land for literally 10,000 years and more, we can learn something from each other. In less than, and all of you know this, in less than a couple of generations, in bringing that lifestyle into a more comfortable pattern, we have created some very serious problems. And that is not to say that we go back to the good and bad old days, but we bring the good from the past into today and try to make it work. So that's the basis of this program, a whole lot of learning. And adapting to the problems that we have in the present. And one of the, well, there are so many problems now. Energy, as you heard earlier, is huge. You all know that. The cost of energy. The cost of construction is huge. The fact that building a home in rural Alaska is not attainable at this point in the way that we've been going for most families. There just are not the resources to do it. And yet those people have the capability of doing a great deal through their creative process and through their talents. So again, as a partnership with housing authorities, with rural people, and also with our urban populations, we need to look for those answers. The future is changing fast. All of you know that. It again creates this sense of urgency that we have got to move quickly on the issues that we need to address. One example, some of you may have heard about our first prototype home. It was built 3 years ago in Anaktuvuk Pass. This is a picture of it. Very much a collaborative effort with the people of Anaktuvuk Pass, a type of architecture that reflects their culture and their lifestyle. They were very intimately involved in the design of this home. As building scientists, our goal was to put one house in a DC-6. Very few materials there. get that house there, build it quickly with local labor. This first attempt was a great success. This is all in a documentary film, too, that is on our website. You can see how this was done. It used local materials as much as possible, but it used the local resource, really, that is the people. We tried to integrate alternative energy systems in this house so that the energy on a renewable level could sustain this home. We also treated water and wastewater on site with this house rather than hook into the utility. The cost of going into the utility was four times more than putting an on-site sewage treatment plant integrated with the house. And heating and ventilation was a very, very simple system. The idea that the house would be extremely comfortable throughout. You'll see a picture there of the results of that house, the Anaktuvuk prototype. That house now has been occupied for 3 years by a wonderful family that continue to be engaged with us. From the average use of fuel in that village of over 1,000 gallons per home, this house uses 150 gallons of fuel oil a year. The difference in temperature between the front room and in the corner of the farthest bedroom is less than a degree. When we were up there this last January, it was 45 below zero with a 30-mile-an-hour wind. The comfort level, the folks keep the house between 78 and 80 degrees inside, comfortably using 150 gallons of fuel oil a year. So these things are possible.
If I may, if I could just ask a question here. I see you had mentioned the earth berming that was done there, where just dirt was put up against the side of the building there, and that just goes on one side of the building. That's not all the way around. Is that correct?
It went toward the prevailing wind.
Okay.
That house was built not to drift.
Okay.
So the edges on the prevailing wind were tapered off and earth bermed. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
We've refined this design. We are in five villages on the North Slope with refinements of this different design, working with the local housing authority out of Barrow, TNHA, and these houses are being lived in throughout the North Slope.
And it says that a new house is $750,000. Is that the cost of a new house or the cost of the prototype?
No, the Anaktuvuk Pass, this is the cost of a new home in Anaktuvuk Pass.
Okay.
And that's a SIP panel home flown into Anaktuvuk Pass. The quotes that TNHA got for building in that village. It's a very difficult village because there's no way to get any material in there except by plane. This house, we've gone through several iterations of actual cost, what we felt it costs and what it would have cost if it had gone through the whole process that the housing authority needs to go through. Mm-hmm. Going through all the process of the housing authority, this house came out at about $300,000.
Okay.
Our idea is to lower that cost more if possible.
Mm-hmm. And we have a question, Representative Peterson.
And how many square feet? I was looking to see how many square feet.
That's an 1,100 square foot house.
Okay, thank you.
Three bedroom.
What R rating would you give that?
That's R60, all the way around. The house is constructed with a soy-based foam. There are no conductive surfaces to the outside. The house is literally encased in the soy-based foam. Now, this design, again, was specific to Anaktuvuk Pass. In other regions, we've taken the same principles and the same approach of working with the communities, but it's a different design. Obviously, in some areas, you're not going to be able to berm earth over the house, depending on the soils. On the North Slope, we're designing our houses to be on a thermal raft. So the house itself sits on an R120 raft that keeps the ground undisturbed below the house. And our modeling has shown no change of the permafrost below the house for at least 80 years. So very, very stable. Those houses are being built in Atkasuk and in Point Lay right now.
Representative Lynn, question?
Thank you. I may miss it, but how do you keep, I guess, humidity or the sweat perspiration inside the house?
That's a wonderful question. And actually, we have a number of solutions for that, and I'm going to show you a little further on a very creative heating and ventilation system that we're using on these houses. But we're using a recirculating system with, in the airstream of the HRV, is a heating element. The heating element that we're using is a long-haul truck rig Webasto heater, the kind that they use for trucks on the North Slope to keep the cabs warm without running the motor. So it's a 17,000 BTU unit, very small unit, and it puts air into the airstream of the heat recovery ventilator. These homes, our prototype homes, are instrumented so that we can tell the level of CO2, the level of moisture, the temperature. We can even tell the occupant load by the air quality in the house and what's changing, what they're cooking for dinner, literally.
The more people, the less the quality?
Well, but these houses literally can tell when the folks are in there and start ventilating more for the occupant load. Very, very healthy indoor air quality, which is a key.
Representative Foster here for the record, and I just wanted to make a comment. Very impressive about the, in 2009, 150 gallons of fuel. I think my house is probably about 1,200 square feet. You said this was 1,100 square feet, mm-hmm. and there is no way I go through 150 gallons in one whole year. It's 10 or 20 times that, so that's very impressive, and especially in a place like Inuktitut, where it's much colder than Nome. So
we had actually modeled the home on our programs to use 112 gallons of fuel a year, but they keep the home at 80. So it uses more fuel because it's a little warmer. The only complaint in that house that we've had from the occupants is that on one of those days, as I described, with the high winds and 40 below zero, their three-year-old started heading outside in his diaper because he didn't know it was cold outside. Okay. Pretty nice.
I do have somebody checking to see if this room is being taken after energy here. I think, as far as I know, it's available, and so if we need to go over with the hydropower dam, we can do that. But just in case the room is being taken up afterwards, if we could maybe go move along, and we'll keep our questions limited here. So,
you want me to move along a little quicker?
Take your time. But I think on our end, we'll try and reduce the questions that we have. So,
well, of course, I'm delighted you have questions. Okay. The next slide had to do with Quinnahock. Again, a very different environment down in the Kuskokwim Delta, different conditions, some serious problems with the housing stock. I imagine many of you familiar with what is going on in that region. In Quinnahock, we did an assessment of the homes. Over 30% of the homes that we examined were at catastrophic structural failure, using 1,200, 1,400 gallons of fuel oil a year. Mm-hmm. So Quinnahock was the next village that we engaged in this collaborative effort of designing a home, and this was the design that Quinnahock came up with for their region. Very, very different from the Inuktitut house, but reflecting their culture. That particular shape almost speaks of a yurt, and that was the shape of their original homes. Now, as it would turn out, that is the most efficient shape thermally that you could design, because the ratio of space, cubic feet of space in a circle, is much better than square edges. The other thing is that in a high wind event, this house never drifts. There's never an issue of getting out of this house because there's a venturi created around that shape, and it keeps the area around the house clear of snow. So egress is great. Again, this house used a sophisticated heat recovery ventilation system and the smallest Toyotomi heater that we could buy, which is really too big for the house. Results of this house were very similar to Inuktitut. Again, it modeled to use less than 120 gallons a year. It now has used 170 gallons a year, this house, for the second year in a row, and very good indoor air quality.
I do stand corrected. We do have corrections at 5, so just so everybody's aware. Please continue.
Great. It's hard for people to see the work that we're doing in rural Alaska, In the Kuskokwim region, we're now working in a number of different villages down in that area, including Crooked Creek. We just did a project down there this summer in response to the flood damage. But one very exciting project, we are on the campus of the University of Alaska. Again, we leased land from them. I approached Chancellor Rogers last year because of a feeling that folks like you couldn't access some of the work that we were doing in rural Alaska, and indeed affordable homes in our urban areas is just as critical for many folks as it is in the rural areas. So we are going to be starting this spring what is called a sustainable village at UAF. We're going to be building a village there over the next 10 years, four homes a year, a total of 40 homes in a village setting that addresses and points to zero energy homes, meaning only renewables to keep these houses warm, the kind of efficiencies and better that you're seeing in our rural houses. Students are involved in the design process. Students and workforce development will be involved in the building of the homes. The houses will have a private sector model, meaning they'll be financed and paid by the anchor tenants, which are the students that help design and are living in these homes. So no ask for the legislature for the student housing in this deal. And it will be a place that you can come and see the science in the edge of what is possible. And rather than having to jump in a plane and go to Anaktuvuk Pass to tinker with a prototype, it'll be right there on campus next to the Housing Research Center. So lots of innovations. We're on the innovation page. I'll move along quickly that we're working on everything from heat pump technology to solar thermal strategies to geopolymer concretes, which I'll explain on not the next page. The next page shows the breathe system. The breathe system is this combination high efficiency long rig truck heater incorporated with an HRV. And oh, by the way, it runs off of 12 volt. It's a 12 volt battery. So when the electricity goes out, it still works and produces great indoor air quality. Again, it's hard to find a heating appliance that's small enough for the efficiencies of these homes. Passive refrigeration. We're doing a great deal of study related to passive refrigeration. Why in the world in Alaska are we running refrigerators and freezers in the middle of winter? How can we use the outside air to control the temperature in a refrigerator? And we've developing the technologies so that long-term use of and storage of vegetables and produce and wild meats can be passively kept frozen in the wintertime and to the point of cooling ice cellars in the winter or in the summer. This next slide is on geopolymer concretes. Please keep an eye on what we're doing with geopolymers. We're taking a waste stream material, which is fly ash from the Golden Valley power plant and the Aurora power plant in Fairbanks, and replacing Portland cement 100% with a geopolymer that's created from local materials. We'll be putting an addition on our research center this year that will be the first demonstration in North America of the use of fly ash in geopolymer concrete as a substitute for Portland cement, which is a great industry for Alaska. And when dams are built, we can produce and have the material here to do it rather than importing a very carbon-intensive material. We are also doing net zero, as I said, homes. This one in Fairbanks literally is heated by the sun and a little bit of wood supplement year-round. The addition that we're putting on our building will have 50,000 gallons of thermal water storage that we're building in situ tank. We're storing heat seasonally, and we're heating the buildings with it the rest of the year, so it uses no fossil fuels. These things are all possible, and we're getting a lot of international attention on this work. The power of information, this particular slide means we've got to get it out to you. The things that we're doing in Alaska, all of us, the programs that you have supported, the energy efficiency programs, the retrofit programs, the follow-up on those programs to see how well what works and what it's costing us. These are world-class. No one else but Alaska is doing this kind of work. and it's of extreme interest. I'm leaving next week for Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Greenland to share what we're doing with Alaska. So great work, and great work that you're doing. For instance, this little group right here just illustrates what retrofits can do. If we stay on the same scale that we're doing right now in the retrofit programs and weatherize all the houses in the state of Alaska, just the homes, it represents an energy savings the same as the output of the proposed Susitna Dam. Now, of course, that's not saying we don't need the Susitna Dam, which we all know we dearly need, but the impact of good energy efficiency, the power that you don't use, has a tremendous impact. Power cost equalization. Whatever you can save is money the state doesn't have to spend. You spend it once, you don't spend it again. So just in conclusion, I think that in Alaska we have the most creative people in the world, and that's the ones that came early and the ones that are a little later. And together we can really find some solutions. We want to keep you in the loop of what we're doing, and appreciate the opportunity to address you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may add just one a good example of some of the technologies and the new materials that we're using in these projects are being brought back to, in particular in my case, in Juneau here. We're seeing about 50% of the new homes being built now using some method of the exterior insulation method or just using these spray foam products in interior, because they're still seeing 30% energy reductions and, you know, more comfortable homes. So wherever we're at, we're all learning lessons and applying those statewide. Thanks.
Well, it's absolutely a fascinating subject. Just being a homeowner and having number of properties, I certainly would like to learn more, and I'm sure a lot of people on the TV would like to learn a lot more too. And so, Representative Lynn,
this is totally the opposite of what you folks are involved in. But would some of these same features work in desert areas in the American Southwest to keep the heat out and would save the energy of air conditioning?
Absolutely. The principles and the things that we're learning in our extreme environment apply globally. And there's the interest.
So you could, because I know when I lived in Southern California, my electric bill was outrageous, and that was primarily from air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. And
just one quick question.
Okay, quick question in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you getting patents on some of this new technology that you're perfecting? Just wondering.
We haven't had the resources and the cost of patenting. What we're trying to do is get it commercialized and have others take the ball and run with it. Right. I think you'll see that with the geopolymers.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate that. And so if we could have the next agenda item.
Very good.
The Chikum Nuk Lake Hydro Power Project folks come up. And with us today, we have Andrew Guy, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Chulista Regional Native Corporation, as well as Christine Klein, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Chulista Regional Native Corp, Elaine Brown, Executive Director of NuVista Light and Electric Cooperative. And looks like we're going to get set up here. And
Do you already have this on your system by chance? We sent everything down. Can you tell?
Does that just it's a matter of plugging in?
Give
it a shot. I'm gonna take an ease here, real quick here. Just back in here, and let's see here. I did want to say let's. What we're going to go over a little bit, I want to make sure that we're being fair, and so take your time, and I know that we have another committee, but with that said, I believe it's also Representative Bryce Edgman's committee, so I think they'll indulge us a little extra time here, so we want to make sure that you're getting your time here. So with that, if you could just please state your name and affiliation for the record, and proceed with your testimony, and thank you for being with us here.
Thank you. My name is Christine Klein. I'm with Chulista Corporation and also NuVista Electric and Light Co-op. I'm here today to give you an update on the Chikuminik hydropower project from last year. And I also have Elaine Brown with me, the CEO of NuVista.
Hello, my name is Elaine Brown, and I'm the CEO for NuVista Light and Electric Co-op.
What I thought I would do today, the last time you saw me last year, we were requesting funding and your support for a hydropower project in Southwest Alaska. And we thank you for your support and assistance for making that possible and the $10 million that was put towards this project as one of the highest priorities in the Chulista ABCP region. This year, we're simply here to give you an update. That had been requested that we give regular updates on this project, and also to formally introduce you to the new chief executive that was hired for NuVista Co-op, and also to thank all of you for your assistance in that funding. Elaine was hired last August, I believe it was. We did a nationwide recruitment for the NuVista Co-op and hydropower. And we had quite a few applicants, and we were thrilled to get someone from our region who is a shareholder and also highly qualified as the former CEO of North Star Gas. We're thrilled to have her here, and especially since she's from our region. Our mission is to improve the energy economics of rural Alaska, and this is certainly going to get us on our way. Our nonprofit is also made up of 12 board members from throughout the region, as well as AVEC, who you heard from earlier today, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the Regional Housing Authority, the Middle Kuskokwim Electric, Chininik Wind, Lower Yukon, Association of Village Council Presidents, and Chulista Corporation. And we've had a lot of interest for new members recently, and I'll let Elaine give you an update of just what has happened since you approved this project and the funding. Thank you.
Thank you, for Mr. Chairman and committee members. This project is going to cover about 59,000 square miles, 56 villages. Actually, it'll power 14, but there's 56 villages in the Chulista region. This also covers the Kuskokwim and Yukon rivers. The population in our region has been increasing, unlike other areas, by about approximately 6% a year. So this hydro project is very important to the region. In the past few months, we have read approximately 38 reports that have been done, studies that have been done on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta area, and there's been 7 of them actually done on hydropower within our region. We have a region-wide, currently we are working on a region-wide energy comprehensive study with another contract with AEA, and we've been traveling out into the region with that project. We're also looking at connecting with infrastructure, linking infrastructure that is extremely lacking in our region in the Kuskokwim area. We're looking at putting a grid system. The Denali Commission has a report that we used that map actually to start out the template of the grid system. Like I said earlier, our population has been increasing by about 6% in the Kuskokwim-Yukon area. Without any infrastructure, you know, the power is extremely high. Fuel is extremely high in price. Needed is one of the things about this project is we've been looking at a permanent solution. PCE is part of it, but it's not a long-term solution, and so we're looking at a permanent solution in our region. We're looking at wind, hydro, inner ties. And this will displace approximately about 5 million gallons of diesel fuel within the Kuskokwim area, which equals to about $32,500,000. And that's based on $6.50 a gallon, which it is approximately right now. And it will also eliminate about 55,000 tons of CO2 in the region per year. So that's quite a huge difference in the CO2 that's going to be eliminated. The YK Delta Energy This past year, the prices have been about $6 to $10 per gallon for diesel fuel. We are looking at, after talking with the fuel distributors, as of last week, we're looking at the fuel delivered to the region of about $7 to $12 in 2012, with prices currently. In the past, 15 to 20% of family income was used for home heating fuel, and now 60 to 75% people are using to heat their homes. Electricity generation, every community has their own generation plants. They're old, they're needing upcoming replacement. We're looking at the possibility in the future of a lot of diesel plants that are going to be needing repair, new power plants being brought in. PCE cannot keep up with the cost of fuel. I mean, it's not a permanent solution, and it helps with homes. And the 700 raising it to 700 kilowatts would be awesome. The electrical costs. The electrical costs in the past, this graph here that you have, shows where we are in 2010. The cost of fuel is two times the cost in the villages. The fuel is two times the cost of diesel fuel in Bethel. And electricity out in the region is 3.5 times the cost of Anchorage right now. You know, so it's we are looking at an average of about 82.5 per kilowatt hour out in the region, and it runs anywhere between 68 cents per kilowatt hour all the way up to $1.20, $1.25 per kilowatt hour. So the average is about 82. So,
and this graph is to simply illustrate that in 2005 the projections were that within 20 years the cost would be at 70 cents. And as you can see, within a couple of years, we already have gone off the graph for electricity in the region. And so we wanted to show you that with respect to what's really happening out in the region and throughout Alaska right now with on the cost of energy for people.
Representative Foster here, the cost per kilowatt hour that you're quoting, is that with PCE included or not included? The current prices that are out in the various communities?
Chairman Foster, it varies by what area and how much is being consumed, but the 83 cents would be with PCE, with the subsidy. Mm-hmm. Without it, it would be even worse.
Okay, thank you.
Where we have been in the last year or so, we've read the 38 reports. We've been in our region. We look at about approximately 20 million gallons. One third of the entire state of fuel is consumed within our region. We have absolutely no infrastructure other than a few inner ties that have already been in place. AVEC is continuing to work on putting inner ties. NuVista is looking at installing inner ties to connect and build a grid system out in the region. But right now we have absolutely no transmission lines, no roads, absolutely nothing out there. We have looked at coal and hydropower repeatedly. Feasibility studies have been done in the past. Like I said, there were seven of them. Energy costs are continually escalating on a yearly basis. We're looking at also with the energy study that we're also doing, we're looking at alternative ways that communities could bring in natural renewable energies like wind, biomass, hydro. Diesel will always be there, but we're trying to displace as much diesel as possible. On the coastal villages, wind is being brought in. There is a lot of new interest in wind in the Kuskokwim area. There's a lot of studies that are going on right now. They are just now getting on board with bringing in wind turbines into the communities. And like we said earlier, we would like to thank you for your support in 2011. Chicoutimi Lake Hydro Energy Program is up and running. We do have a contract. We did come down, Christine did come down last year for the 17,000 or 17 million, sorry, 600,000 appropriation. We did get granted $10 million. We are starting our permitting process right now. We are going into the licensing phase. We are getting ready to file the preliminary FERC application this week or next week, so it's coming up right away. We're looking at doing a bunch of environmental studies this summer, preliminary engineering investigations, along with holding public meetings in both regions, both Bristol Bay region and the Chulista region. And what we have completed to date, we've had a few with the energy plan that we've been working on also. We have had community meetings in Bethel at the AVCP Housing Authority meeting last year, where Chicoutimi was chosen over the Kieseralik hydropower plants. We've brought on the executive director and a program manager who will be working following the project throughout. The NuVista team is working on developing scopes, public meetings, agency coordination, and I can say one really great thing, we're 100% Alaskan hire, and we are 75% Native hire, and we are also Yupik speaking within the company, which is a big, you know. Chicoutimi, we have our stream gauge in. It went in. We have a contract with USGS. Our stream gauge went in last October, right before the ice came in. Actually, it was just a couple days. We have a comprehensive energy plan that we are working on also at the same time, and we are integrating a lot of the past reports and future works into the comprehensive energy plan, and also it is helping to develop the Chicoutimi. We're looking at, like I said, a regional intertie system within a grid system within the region, because we do not have any kind of infrastructure. We are currently going out and applying for grants to start that at the same time that we're starting the development of the Chicoutimi.
We heard very clearly from you last year. You wanted to know about our future funding, and Lane and her team have been actually helping some of the communities with their grant applications for federal funds and other different funds that are available. So we are taking your advice seriously and doing some great work there, too, I should point out.
We did sign an engineering agreement with Hatch Engineering in January. And we have 9 subcontractors that will be working with Hatch, and they're all Alaska-based subcontractors out of Fairbanks, Anchorage, Wasilla, and Bethel. So they are all local companies, which is very important. And we the next picture is a map. It's a sub-regional map, and we broke this down into sub-regions for intertie purposes, because we're working within each sub-region to start developing interties. And this does show existing interties that are currently in place. There's only about 4 of them, and there's another proposed intertie between St. Mary's and Mountain Village. There's a lot of wind turbines that you can see on the map down on the coastal region. And within subregion number 1 is where all of the testing data for wind turbines are being done right now. And this map was adopted at our first community meeting in Bethel this past October. At the ABCP convention in Bethel, 56 villages were represented, and they did adopt this map for future use. This is our schedule for the Chicoominick Lake Hydro project. We're looking at our licensing, design, and construction. Within the first 2 or 3 years, we're going to be extremely busy out in the field doing our field studies, engineering and environmental, the agency consulting, public meetings within the Dillingham region, the Chilista region, and in Anchorage with the agencies. And as you can see, the FERC licensing, field final design, and then construction, we are looking at flipping the switch and a very aggressive schedule in 2021. So we have a very aggressive schedule that we are, our feet are being held to the fire on. Our planned activities here in 2012, this February, we're going to be filing our preliminary FERC permit application. DNR, we just had our DNR meeting last Wednesday, which went very well. We talked to them about permitting being done, the types of permits, how long the lead time was for each permit. And like I said, a few of them should be submitted this week. In March, we're having an introduction agency meeting in Anchorage to discuss the initial study gap analysis results, early startup into the fields with all of the agencies in Anchorage. Wood-Tikchik, we're going to be working with the Wood-Tikchik Advisory Council. We're having a meeting with them in April. And then we're going out into the region where this project was chosen. Chicoominick Lake was chosen at the AVCP Housing Authority meeting last year. So we are going out to them the end of March to do a update to the communities that chose this project. And then we are going to hold another meeting in April with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, and that'll be another information meeting of where we are, what we're doing, where we're going, bring them up to speed. And then through May and October, actually the rest of this year, we'll be doing joint public meetings in Anchorage and out in the region, and we'll be doing a lot of preliminary engineering and dual field season reconnaissance work this summer and fall. So, and with the dual field season, what we're doing is we had a schedule that would have taken 2 years, but to determine whether this was a go or no-go project, we decided to bring a lot of the geotechnical work that would have happened in 2013 into the year 2012. So we're combining about 2 years, a year and a half into one season. We'll be doing some core drilling in Wood-Tikchik, you know, preliminary to see if the morainal walls will be able to hold the dam and the water. Mm-hmm. So we're moving ahead with that this summer. The next is our phases. And this here kind of shows you where we're looking at the overall cost of the project. The $10 million has gotten us started with the licensing activities, the field geotechs, environmental studies, preliminary engineering, investigations, and holding the public meetings within the region. So that's going to be taking this year and next year, most of this year, and then throughout the winter we'll be coming back into the offices, compiling the data and setting up for next field season. So that's kind of where we are over the life of the project. I won't go into too much detail here, but you can see what we'll be working on over the next 10 years. So, and one thing that I would like to mention is looking at Rail Belt versus the Waikele Delta area. Per capita, the investment in the Waikele Delta, we're looking at $17,262 per capita in the Waikele Delta. And on the Rail Belt, we're looking at $16,200 per capita.
I'm sorry, on the Waikele, that is per capita how much?
$17,262.
Okay.
You know, so there's not, when you compare rail belt to rural, there's not a whole lot of difference. I mean.
Well, I think, and maybe if we could ask our questions outside about 5 minutes ago.
One real quick question.
Okay, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you were comparing this dam project to what the cost of the Susitna Dam project is estimated to cost. And one other question, I'm trying to look at this map to see where this dam is going to take place, and I don't see it pinpointed on here.
It's actually down on the other side of the yellow line. It's about the third lake down, the third big lake down. To the right.
To the right of the yellow line, about mid photo there, right past the legend, to the left of the legend, and to the right of the yellow line will be about the third lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Chukumanik Lake.
Oh. It's right about here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so. Thank you.
Real good. Well, very full schedule today. I think we got a lot done, and certainly appreciate the update there, and we look forward to getting more updates from you as the project moves forward. And so with that said, there's no meeting scheduled for Thursday, February 16. The next regular committee meeting is to be announced, and the meeting is adjourned at 5:12 p.m., and thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.